Broadcasting live statewide from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who wanted to be in porn but didn't have the acting chops, Pete Schwabba.
Welcome back. We are kicking off hour number two of Nightlight here. So great to have you with me on this Tuesday night. Such a fun show. Ben Chan, Jeopardy champ Ben Chan, is coming up in hour number two here tomorrow night. Former Marquette guard and Dwayne Wade backcourt mate Todd Townsend joins us. He was part of the Final Four team with Marquette several years ago. He'll talk about Marquette's run in the NCAA tournament. Right now, I'm just thrilled to have this guest on with me, Rich Scheidner. He is a stand-up comedian that I look up to, and just was my first experience meeting a guy I had seen on TV, and he was a very good guy. At least to me, Rich. You were nice to me. That's all I can say. I can't vouch for everyone.
It was a good time. I always ask people when we met, if they go before 1985, I go, do I owe you amends? I mean, that's when I quit drinking, 85. So there was a shift.
You know, it's so funny you say that. I remember when I started doing stand-up, every headliner I worked with either drank too much or was in recovery. There was like very few guys.
There was no in between.
No moderation. Yeah. Hey, you were talking about Hidden Truths, and we have these hard breaks we have to hit. So I didn't mean to cut you off, but what you were saying about Hidden Truths. Right. It was fascinating. If you could continue with that, that'd be great.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's always something behind a joke. The teller reveals about their personality, reveals things about the personality with the kind of jokes they tell. Right.
Yeah.
So like say guys back in the '50s, there were a lot of cheating jokes, right? Like this, here's an old cheating joke. A guy thinks his wife is cheating on him, so he comes home from work early one night. And sure enough, his wife is in bed with his best friend. He takes out a gun and he shoots the guy. And his wife says, "You keep that up, you're not going to have any friends left." Right? So it reveals that insecurity the guy has about his wife. You know, there's so many. There's so many that look like they're slamming one person, but they're really revealing a neurosis and anxiety about the teller of the joke. And so the truth that I mean, you watch the great comics, guys like Carlin or Chappelle today, people who will walk that line. I mean, I know people always say, PC's killing comedy. Is that even possible? First of all, it's doing better than ever. These comics they use PC as a marketing tool. I'm a dangerous comic.
Yeah.
I gotta go out and see that dangerous comic. Gotta go out and see him. I could get canceled at any moment. Anytime during my show, they could come on and just cancel me. No comic's been canceled. They're all built, they're all filling up stadiums and more theater acts than ever before.
No one's actually getting the hook.
Nobody is. It's a great marketing tool. We're dangerous. Nobody PC, everything. There's always been PC, and there's always been a form of cancel culture. If you go back to vaudeville, the beginning, the theater owners, they used to say what the comics could say on stage. That's where blue material comes from. If you'd had something in your act in early vaudeville 100 years ago that they didn't like, they'd write it on a piece of paper and put it in a blue envelope and slide it under your dressing room door.
Oh, wow. Really?
That's blue. And you better not do any more of that material. But there was always comics who would push the line. Right, you remember Milton Berle?
Oh, sure.
Right. So when you and I were young, he was a really old guy, right? But back in the 1920s, he was a teenager doing stand-up comedy in vaudeville, and he used to bill himself as a wayward act, which might as well have just called him a thug back then, right? He was a juvenile delinquent on stage, so he'd always push the line, right? The things he couldn't say, he'd go. A girl says to me, "Are you staring at my knees?" I said, "No, I'm way above that." And that got him fired in 1925.
Whoa, right? Come on.
Yeah. Yes. Because in vaudeville, man, you couldn't say gosh, darn, holy gee. You couldn't say anything that sounded remotely like a sexual innuendo. You had to work so squeaky clean. And so the theater owners were the cancel culture of that time. Club owners have always been like that.
Yeah. Wow. That is the voice of Rich Scheidner. He is my guest here on Nightlight at the moment. And talking about his great career, you can check out his book, The History of, Kicking Through the Ashes, My Life as a Stand-Up in the 1980s comedy boom. Check out I Am Comic. That was cool, huh? Jordan Brady did a documentary or followed you around?
It wasn't that way. You know, he came to me. Mark Schiff and I put out a book called, it was called I Killed back in 2005, 2006. It was just a bunch of road stories from all these comics. And Jordan Brady came up to me one time after that and said, I'd like to do a documentary about stand-ups. I said, well, great. I'd love to. He said, I want you to be involved in writing and interviewing the comics. I said, sure. Because I wanted to know, like, I always like the same thing that you were talking about. What was your first time on stage? Yeah, I always wanted to ask every comic that. And other things I wanted to talk to comics about. And as we were doing a documentary, we were in the UCB one night in West Hollywood, California. And we were watching all these young comics on stage. And Jordan must have, he kind of looked over and saw that look on my face like, I got to get up there again, you know, like, cause I hadn't done it in years.
Right.
And he just sort of, you know, I mean, it was a sucker play, you know, he turned the cameras on a narcissist. I had no choice.
He played you. Perform. Yeah.
He played me. Hey, you want to go on stage? Okay. But only if you film it, only if you film me bombing.
Okay. So, all right. So Rich, you've been in movies, Roxanne, Beverly Hills Cop 2, TV, Roseanne, Married with Children, The Golden Girls. You've done your own specials. You've done all the pertinent late night shows of your era. What was the most thrilling moment for you as an artist? Like, what of those mediums that you did, you were like, I can't believe I'm doing this?
Well, if you know, every comic of my generation, first time you did Carson, because he was the gatekeeper back then. But to me, what was more important was about my fifth or sixth Carson, I was on with Don Rickles. My dad, I quit a law. I would have been a very mediocre lawyer who probably dried, you know, just, but I instead decided to become a very mediocre comic. So I made a shift and it didn't really make sense to my dad. And so he didn't talk to me for like 5-6 years after I was doing stand-up, even after I started doing the Tonight Show, right? He didn't talk to me. And then I kind of knew that he'd be on when I did this show with Rickles one night. I was a comic on Rickles, right? And I made Rickles and Carson laugh. When I finished my set, instead of just going back to the curtain, I backed back to the curtain with a stance like a gunfighter, like I was backing out of a saloon, right? I'm looking at the crowd like, don't make a move, right? And they started laughing. And my dad called me up the next day and said, you made Johnny Carson laugh. You're good at this.
Oh, right? Man.
And so that was probably my most thrilling moment on a personal level, and also making Carson laugh. So it was a great, that was probably my biggest thrill, honestly, because my dad is, you know, we all have that thing. I mean, my dad was a funny guy. That's probably where I got it from. We all have like, and my mom had a dry sense of humor, but my dad was like, he was always quipping. I mean, seriously, he's 92 years old, or 93 now. He's 93. And we just had a party for him, right?
Wow.
And so we're telling stories about it, but we're all shocked that he made that for. I mean, the guy drank and smoked like a fiend for 50 years, right? Before he quit. And we're like, Dad, and finally I turned to him and said, Dad, how did you get the 93? And he goes, slowly. You know? I go, come on, man, he still got it.
That's great. I think a lot of parents too, like they like if you'd become a lawyer, that's a service you could provide at some point, or a doctor, or an electrician, whatever. No, never no, does a guy no say, I need a comedian. You know what I mean? Hey, my daughter's down in the dumps. Can you cheer her up? Keep it clean. She's 12, you know.
That's so true.
It's true.
That's so true. No, it's absolutely right. My family had a lot of potential defendants, so there's no question about that. But you're absolutely right, man. There's nobody going, we need more comedians. there's so many now. I mean, you know, this... There's people who we have a thing that your generation, my generation never had, which was we have permanent, longstanding amateurs and hobbyists, people who will never intend to go pro. They're never going to go pro. They can just play around and wherever they are, because there's stand up in every hamlet, every village has a comedy night, right? It used to be a heckle. You'd be on stage and somebody'd say, don't quit your day job, right? And now you yell at one of these comics, don't quit your day job. And the guy goes, I have no intention of quitting. I got a good 401. I got dental. I'm not quitting my day job.
Crazy.
Just something to, right. I'm not nuts. This is just something to do. I'm just killing time. That's, you know.
Ritz, this has been so much fun. I just want to say, when I saw on your website too, Jerry Seinfeld says, Rich Schneider is a terrific comedy writer and definitely one of the good guys. Jeff Foxworthy says, Rich helped me write two albums, both of which were nominated for Grammys. I've always thought he was one of the best stand-ups ever, and I could not agree more. I cannot thank you enough for your time tonight. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you. Thank you, Pete. You gave me something. I'll go down and strut, and my wife is asleep, and I'll just wake her up, tell her how good I did.
Well, enjoy Asheville, my friend, and come back anytime. You got an open door policy. Yeah, thank you so much, Rich.
I'll take you up on that. Thanks, Pete.
Okay, good bud. Luck, have a great night. That is Rich Schneider, and that's fun. I've been wanting to have Rich on for quite a while. So quite a while, Conrad. We've been on 3.5 months. Yeah. I'm getting dramatic. That's what people in this industry do.
Been waiting on that for 2 years, huh?
Waiting on that for 2 years, exactly. First, I got to get a radio show. Then I'm going to have Rich on. So that's how it worked. Hey, what is this thing you sent me? This Pirates of the Caribbean producer, we're going to reboot the franchise, which is easier to put together because you don't have to wait for certain actors. Is he taking a shot at Johnny Depp?
Well, I just think it's crazy that they're going to reboot him in the first place. I thought it was just one movie, one more movie, and done.
Yeah.
But I think they're actually rebooting it, so.
Holy smokes.
I really enjoyed the Pirates of the Caribbean, so I'm actually pretty excited.
I mean, you can always find an actor who's on time.
Yeah.
But Johnny Depp, like, puts the butts in the seats.
Yeah.
And he was great.
He was great in those.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like he's got his quirks in his real life. But, yeah, he's a really good actor. Okay, so Ben Chan is coming up in a little bit. He's been the pride of Northeast Wisconsin for the last, what's it been, like 3 months? No, more than that.
Yeah,
this
more than
that. Back to, like, 2023. So, we'll talk to Ben, and I hope Ben is somewhat up on office trivia to the point where he wants to play along. And if not, we'll figure out something else to talk about. I got a ton of questions for Ben. It's going to be a lot of fun. He is darn close to becoming a nightlife bestie. This will be his second visit. We have to figure out an excuse to have him on a third time and make him a bestie. You know, maybe he'll be on Price is Right, and then we can have him.
There we go.
That's his intellect will be wasted.
Or Family Feud.
Or Family Feud. Oh, Family Feud would be sweet. I'd love to be part of the Chan clan. Okay, he's coming up next in just a few minutes. And when we come back, coming up next, we're going to talk a little bit about The Godfather. It dropped this week and The Office. We've got clips from both and then a great chat coming up with Ben Chan. Don't leave. You got Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I doubt it's subterranean by design. I wonder what I would find if I met you. Let my eyes caress you until I meet the thought of Mrs. Princess, who often wonder what makes her work. I guess I'll leave that question to the experts. Assuming that there are some out there, they're probably alone. Solitaire.
Another night, another. We are back. Got some text here. Our question tonight: how much sleep do you get a night? How much do you wish you got a night? I read an article in Yahoo that went into sleep patterns for different generations, Z. And I know they say as you get older, you don't sleep as long or as well. So it's ultra important to get sleep earlier in your life, because if you don't, you're going to pay the check on that at some point. So the more sleep you get as a youngster, the better off you are. So that's our question tonight. How much sleep do you get? How much do you wish you got? You can text us at 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC, or you can text us on the app. Conrad, did I read your mom's text? Yeah, we've read that. Okay. Carla from Baraboo says, at my crash pad in Chicago, got my crash pad mates listening to the show. We love the history of comedy because we need it, being in the airline industry. I cannot even imagine. The airline industry, people get irate. And you know, it's not flight attendants. It's the gate agents and just kind of the higher ups, the CEOs and the executives like that, I think. Yeah, Carla, you got your work cut out for you but you know what? I also think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Carla, I don't think people get mad at flight attendants, as mad as they might be at the airline. I'm sure they suffer some of that. But I think people, it's like when you get a customer service person on the line and you're like, and I always say this to them, if I'm kind of going off on them, I'll say, you know, look, I know this isn't your policy, but how would you feel if you were me? And you know what? Most of the time they agree, even though the call is being recorded. So I think flight attendants might get a dose of that too. Carla also says, plus, yes, Conrad, if need to travel, I can. Oh, Conrad just got himself a free ticket.
I think I might be going to Florida soon, Pete. I need to find a producer for a couple days.
Okay, we can figure that out. I'll live vicariously through you while you're in Florida. She also says, and now with the show playing, jokes are flying. Well, good, Carla. That's what we're here for. We want you to have fun. We want to pay that forward. Laughter is always good. From the 715, Joe says, I get 7, wish I got 8. I assume that means sleep. Yeah, we all wish we had 8 hours of sleep. I totally agree with you, Joe. And then also Carla. Carla's active. Carla is speaking, I think, on behalf of the whole room.
Yeah.
She's having a little party at the crash pad. She says, love the Golden Girls. Who are we just? We just had someone on last night that we were talking about how the Golden Girls. Oh, Stuart Waddles. We were talking about 80s sitcoms. Very well-written show. Like, I never watched it. When I was 20, I'm like, why would I watch this? But it just shows you how stupid I was. Like, the writing was brilliant. Designing Women, another one. They market it towards women, Golden Girls. They market it towards older people like Sanford and Son and that kind of stuff. And when you're young, give it a chance. It's good stuff. So, yeah, I'm with you. Golden Girls is a great show. And Rich Steiner was on Golden Girls, Designing Women. I remember him in Roxanne. He and the comedian Kevin Nealon were walking, and Steve Martin just kind of laid them both out because they made jokes about his nose. That was Rich Scheidner in one of those roles. So, okay. So this week, this is a big week for iconic cultural, pop cultural entertainment. The Godfather came out in 1972. Considered by many the greatest movie of all time. And I've said this before show, I can't turn off The Godfather. When it is on, and I didn't grow up watching it over and over. It wasn't until I got into my like 20s or even 30s that I became kind of obsessed or appreciated the film more, just the aesthetics of it. And I read a book and an entire chapter was just about how Coppola lit each scene. And that totally pays off because the aesthetic for the whole film is incredible. It's hypnotic. And all these terrible, violent things that are happening in these exchanges are perfectly lit. You feel like you're there. So I totally, it's not maybe in my top 5, it's in my top 10, but I couldn't argue with anybody who says it's the best movie of all time. And some people even think Godfather 2 is better. But we have a little montage here from The Godfather to celebrate its dropping in 1972.
You look terrible. Don't you, D? I want you to rest well, and a month from now, this Hollywood big shot's gonna give you what you want.
It's too late. They start shooting in a week.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse. Now go outside, enjoy yourself, and forget about all the time.
Where does it say that you can't kill a cop?
Come on, Mikey.
Tom, wait a minute. I'm talking about a cop that's mixed up in drugs. I'm talking about a dishonest cop. A crooked cop who got mixed up in the rackets and got what was coming to him. It's a terrific story. We have newspaper people on the payroll, don't we, Tom? They might like a story like that.
They might. They just might.
It's not personal, Sonny. It's strictly business.
What the hell is this?
That's a Sicilian message. That means Luca Brasi sleeps with the fishes.
You don't come to Las Vegas and talk to a man like Mo Green like that!
Fredo, you're my older brother, and I love you. But don't ever take sides with anyone against the family again. Ever.
I mean, just all of those lines, you say them and you know exactly what movie you're talking about. Luca Brasi sleeps with the fishes. I'll make him an offer he can't refuse. Just brilliant. So great. Okay, and then The Office also dropped this week. Very different entertainment sitcom, but I'm amazed that, and Conrad, you said you weren't a huge fan of The Office, or not that you weren't a fan, but just you hadn't watched it.
Yeah, I haven't watched it. If it comes on, I'll just put it on the background, but I haven't watched every single episode.
What shocks me about The Office is that, you know, like I said earlier, I watched The British Office, loved it. There were only 12 episodes, so they were all, it was so tight, it was great, and then they wrapped it up with a Christmas special. When The American Office started, I didn't boycott it, but I was like, eh, whatever, they're going to Americanize it, whatever. I was so wrong. It's great, and what blows me away about The Office is that my son started watching it in like 7th grade or 8th grade, and all of his friends did it, and they loved it. And to this day, I cannot figure out how they identify, like kids in middle school that have never been in an office. What is it? Great performances, I guess. Great writing. I'm hoping we can talk about this a little bit with Ben Chan. He's coming up next here on Nightlight. Great to have you with me on this Tuesday night. Having fun here on Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network. Ben Chan coming up next.
Miss what's hot from Wisconsin to Hollywood? Listen to Nightlight with Pete Schwabba podcast on civicmedia.us. You can always listen through Spotify, Apple Podcast, or the Civic Media app. Take Nightlight with Pete Schwabba anywhere you go. Once again, here is your host, Pete Schwabba.
Welcome back. As we enter our fourth quadrant of tonight's episode of Nightlight, our question tonight is, how much sleep do you get a night? How much sleep do you wish you got a night? Let us know. Bridget from the 818 says, I usually get 7 to 8 hours of sleep, ideally 8 to 10 hours, and sleeping between the hours of 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. during restorative sleep, regenerative sleep. Wow. All right. From the 920. That's good. God, if you could get 10 hours of sleep, I'd be the happiest guy in the world. I'm with you, Bridget. From the 920, Jim says, Godfather was a great movie, almost as good as Casablanca. Ben, have you seen Casablanca?
I have.
You know what? I just saw the whole thing for the first time all the way through about 6 months ago. It's spectacular.
Yeah, I think I've only seen it all the way through once. I've watched the Marseillaise scene a few times.
Yeah.
Because it's a classic scene and it's kind of interesting philosophically too. But yeah, I should probably rewatch it.
It's in the Rick's American Cafe. I've never wanted to just go to a setting so bad and hang out there. It's like a character in the movie. It's so great. So I agree with you, Jim. That's I would probably put Casablanca a little bit ahead of The Godfather. But the voice you hear, ladies and gentlemen, is Jeopardy rock star Ben Chan. He is joining us in studio again. He was here a couple weeks ago, right before we found out his fate on Jeopardy. He is, what's it like, Ben, having fans all over the country that was, and why were they rooting for you more so than the other contestants?
I don't know that they were. I mean, I think, you know, I know the people who were rooting for me, and I think there are also people rooting for Yogesh and Troy. You know, I think both, what I can say, I think, is that both Troy and Yogesh came with a lot of expectations on them, right? So they're both well known in the quizzing world, which is an interesting world. Whereas I'm just known for Jeopardy. I'm not really part of the quizzing world, but they've been known for a decade or so as being some of the top quizzers in the world. And so I think they were enjoying themselves and they were having fun because Jeopardy is a fun game, but they also, they had that weight of expectation that you hear about, I think, in sports, right? That
right.
Like, there's, you know, the underdogs is like, all the pressure's on them, right? And that was, there's a little bit of that on stage. And so I think also just partly because it's important that we all play our best and we all want to see each other play our best. I felt like it was partly my role to try to keep things lighter, you know?
Yeah. I think that's why people probably liked you so much too. You were just fun to watch and you, I don't know, you just had an air about you, an easiness and a fun, like that you're really enjoying yourself.
I think I was. It's hard. There it was a lot of pressure.
Yeah, right? Sure.
So I was very deliberately, I was having more fun than I would be if I were just having fun, actually, interestingly.
Well, I appreciate you coming by just to kind of talk retroactively or put some perspective on your time on Jeopardy. Everyone, and I have more than one person wanted me to tell you, they loved how you played. When they found out you were coming on the show tonight, like just that you went for it. Like you kind of threw caution to the wind and you did what you had to do. You were gutsy and people love that. You know, whether, like you said, whether it's in sports or just putting it all on the line, that's admirable.
Yeah. I think I appreciate the comment. I mean, I think, players nowadays, it's hit a kind of turning point with Jeopardy.
Yeah.
Where people realize to compete at that level, you're going to have to be willing to risk it all. And sometimes it's not going to work out. Like it didn't work out for me in the last game, yeah, on the very last clue or the very last Daily Double. But it was still, it was the right move to make. Yeah, I was really close to winning. I haven't second guessed myself because it's definitely the right move. It was just something I didn't know at the moment. The clue was a little confusing to me. They were asking for Cumberland Gap, which isn't like, it's not something that's on the front of my mind. So I missed it. So I haven't had any regrets about it, but yeah, I was shockingly close to winning.
Well, and you had the two previous rounds where you won by a dollar. That's like hitting a home run in the bottom of the ninth or an extra innings. Like just the, how do you feel like you had watch parties and you had people coming out to support you? Talk a little bit about, if you would, about that and how cool that was.
Yeah, that was cool. I mean, I think the main motivation for me, and actually the source of pressure, why I was able to be loose in the finals was I felt a lot of pressure going up to the finals because I knew that in the finals, it was the first to three, right? So there's going to be at least three games. I could have lost the very first game going out there in the whatever quarterfinals and just been one and done, which would have been fine. It happened to, you know, most of the players who went out there lost in the first game, right? So that was where I felt the most pressure because I knew that it would be a really special event if I got to the finals, win or lose, right? That we'd be able to have three or more games. We wound up having six where we could do things like have watch parties at a bunch of different places, right? Where we could have, you know, just kind of take a victory lap and celebrate, you know, what an amazing ride it's been. And so that, I felt a lot of pressure getting to the finals. I think that's part of why I was loose in the finals, was like, oh, okay, now this is what I came for. This was my number one goal, was to get to the finals. I knew it was going to be tough whoever was in the finals. But yeah, that would just, I tried to stay process oriented because, you know, that's the thing you have to do is embrace process and not get hung up on results. But I was really hung up on getting to the finals because I knew that was going to be a huge difference in terms of how it was experienced by the community.
Yeah. Right?
That it would be a much more fulfilling experience winner. Like I didn't win, but it felt like a winner. And I think it felt like I was a winner in the community because getting to the finals was a win, right? I think for all of us.
Oh, I think, yeah. I mean, you say that, but everybody, like the first time you were on the show and we put it on Facebook, I had friends from all over. It wasn't just Wisconsin. They were like, oh, we love Ben, you know? So is there a letdown now? Like you're back. You seem like you have really good perspective on it. Just, you were a champion. I mean, you got to lose at some point. It would be hard for me, if I were you, to find fault with anything I did, I would think.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've been incredibly lucky. I think the thing that Jeopardy gave me was perspective, right? Because, you know, you come back from Jeopardy the first time at an amazing run in the grand scheme of things. And then, you know, a few weeks after it, you start resenting the same things you resented before, right? Like, oh, I got to empty the dishwasher, and you know.
Yeah, right.
And then you're like, oh, wait, shouldn't maybe I'm insufficiently grateful about me now. And so it really instilled in me a renewed, and maybe I feel more grateful about everything in my life now than I did before going on, because, yeah, right. It's like, just gives you a different, takes you out of your normal routine.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing sometimes.
Yeah. Is it hard to get back into your routine? Is there a little bit of a letdown?
No, I think it makes you, in my case, and I think actually in the case of, I'm in touch with many of the people, you know, that I played with, it makes you reevaluate what's important in your ordinary life and what's
nice.
The noise you can give up, right? Like what you should, you know, I forget what the saying is, and there's a book, like, don't sweat the small stuff, kind of.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and then there's small stuff you should enjoy. Right? So that's the biggest thing it's given me, is actually gratitude and perspective.
That's the voice of Ben Chan, local hero and Jeopardy rock star. So is it weird going back to work, Ben? Are you back to work? I assume you had to take some time off.
No, I was out for a week. That's how long it took to tape the entire tournament. So that was back in early February, and my colleagues were, you know, kind enough to cover my classes. So, yeah, I missed a week, came back. I think the big thing is actually now I feel more present in my classes, partly because since February, I've always had to be careful about not divulging what happened.
Right.
And so you have a little bit of kind of trying to keep two timelines separate.
Yeah.
And now I don't have to worry about that. So I can just, you have this big secret. You can't let it slip. And so you're always, you're a little bit detached from the present because you have this thing that, you know, people want to know, but you can't tell them.
You know, I that was one of my questions. How that has to be hard to keep a lid on it. I mean, not to tell people like me or people you see at a watch party, but did you tell your wife? Did she know what was going on? Like, I assume.
She didn't want to know because she said the watch parties got really boring. They were really boring knowing what happened the first time out. So she wanted to have a little suspense in the watch parties. So she insisted that I not tell her this time, which I didn't.
Wow.
So I didn't. It's not hard. I mean, I think I said a hard thing is not, like, we keep secrets from people all the time, right? Like, there are so many things you're not telling people, and we're pretty
good at
that.
Speak for yourself, buddy.
Right, even if you're an open book, but like most people we're very good at keeping secrets, actually. Not just like, you know, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a PG example, right?
But in your head, you're going, don't tell them about the shallow graves.
Yeah, exactly, the shallow graves. But everybody has things that they don't tell people.
Sure.
And so that's not hard. I think the hard thing, when it's something good, right?
So, yeah, right. Right.
That's weird. So,
especially to your wife, who you want to get excited, or you want her to, you know.
So yeah, it's not hard not doing it, but it takes a psychic toll not being able to share it.
Yeah. Is there anyone you told?
I told Mike Counter, who's our media relations person, eventually, because it would help him plan the media setup from the college, but. No, I mean,
good for you, man. That's impressive.
So I'm very discreet.
You said I read an article in the Press Gazette that said you were open to going back on if they ever do like a celebrity. How would that happen where you would go back on the show?
Yeah. So they're doing something right now called, this new tournament, the Jeopardy Invitational Tournament. So it's last year they had their first primetime Masters event where they had like six great players. They're doing that again this year, where it's they need six players. Three of them they're getting from last year's Masters. One is a special invitation. One is the winner of the tournament I was just in, Yogesh. And then one is the winner of a kind of a all-time great tournament going on right now called the Jeopardy Invitational Tournament. So if that continues, there's a decent chance that I'd be invited to that next year. And that'd be fun.
Yeah. I'm sure they'd love to have you back. Do you have, are people hitting you up for money?
No, it's more time things, right? Oh. So, which I'm grateful for. Like, I'd like to be, you know, being wanted for things is great. And so the question now is, I have to learn a little bit about, you know, where in terms of time is a limited resource, right? Yeah. So, trying to figure out how to best manage that. Yeah.
So, I want to talk to you also about the slumber party. We'll get to that.
I'm excited about this.
I have one final Jeopardy question for you, though. Not final Jeopardy, but what was your favorite moment overall? The whole deal.
Ooh, that's great. Great question. So there are a few moments that stand out, actually very close to the end. Ken Jennings said to me during the last final Jeopardy, Ben Chan does not miss final Jeopardy. Because I got all six final Jeopardies correct.
Oh, nice.
In the finals. So that's like a big ego. You know, I could put that on my tombstone.
Oh, totally.
Ken Jennings. Yeah. From Ken Jennings, Ben Chan does not miss in final Jeopardy. So I don't think that was the coolest moment. That's probably the most tombstone moment.
That's pretty cool. Well, you did a great job. You made everyone around here proud. I'm sure St. Norbert's loves it. And I'm sure you'll get voted back on just because you're such a likable guy. Not voted back on, but you'll be back on because you're such a likable guy. So we'll look forward to that too. But when I come back, a few more minutes with Ben Chan, who's been nice enough to share his time with us through this whole process and let us be a part of it too, which is great. We are going to talk about a really cool slumber party. Am I saying that right? slumber party. It's hard to say.
It's hard to say.
All right. That's coming up next with Ben Chan on Nightlight with Peach Wabba here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back. Got a couple more texts here. Our question tonight, how much sleep do you get a night? How much do you wish you got? From the 920, Jim says, oh, I already read that. He was comparing Casablanca and The Godfather. From the 920, Steve says, I agree with you, Pete. Whenever I see Godfather 1 or 2, I have to watch it. These two iconic movies will be watched by future generations like the movie It's a Wonderful Life. Mm. Yeah, I would say they probably already are, right? I have to say I was disappointed in Godfather 3. Totally agree with you, Steve. I was disappointed in the ending when the daughter gets shot and killed. Everybody was kind of, that's Sofia Coppola, who's a very talented director, but she
was the most hated person
she, like,
in
she got
cinema
shot,
for a while.
And then she like looked at Al Pacino and went, Dad? Like this like Valley Girl. That was so weird.
I don't know. Should we do a rewatch of The Godfather of Green Bay?
I think we should, Ben. That makes for great radio. Two guys watching a movie, right? Carla is back at it again. She is having fun, Conrad, at the crash pad. We love Casablanca at crash pad. Play it again, Sam. Carla, I think we all need to be invited to your crash pad. This sounds like the place to be. So we'll look for that invitation. Ben, how much sleep do you get a night?
Ooh, it's tricky. I haven't been sleeping well for the past few months. So, I get intermittent sleep.
Oh, that's brutal.
It's brutal. It's been brutal.
So not even like solid.
Yeah. Recently it's been like, I get 4 hours than what I can take after the 4 hours, like 4 hours and then intermittent for a few hours.
Aren't you amazed? Like how you know, once your blood gets pumping, how you don't really need that much sleep. You think you don't anyway, but
it's tricky. Yeah. Yeah. That was the hard thing. That was one thing, you know, I said all that whole tournament on Jeopardy taped in a week. Right. And Jeez. Nobody was sleeping well. That's what everybody would joke about in the morning. It's like, how'd you sleep? It was like horrible. Of course. Right. And so I felt, you know, the end, the final, the last three games taped on the Friday. We had all of us had been sleeping poorly for four straight days. Right. But, the thing I had to remind myself was like, oh, they also have been sleeping poorly.
Right.
So
it's a level playing field.
Yeah, it's a level playing field. We've all been sleeping badly.
Tell us, speaking of sleep and slumber, tell us about the slumber potty.
Oh, yeah.
This is great.
Yeah, so Happily Ever After, which is an animal rescue organization. They do great work. You know, they're trying to raise money. They're a no-kill shelter. They're trying to, their mission is to increase humanity's capacity to care for its companion animals, right? I think one thing I'd say about this is, you know, there's so many worthy causes. Something that Juveria Collins, who's one of the actually other Tournament of Champions contestants, once passed along, was that the thing she tells her daughters is that empathy is not like a cake where you only have so much to give out. Empathy is like a garden, right? That the more you water it, the more you have to give.
Oh, that's great.
Right? So
yeah.
I think like with causes like this, like there are a lot of things to care about. And I think the thing actually from adopting two rescue dogs that I've learned from my animal companions is that they've made me more empathetic towards a lot of different creatures and people, right? That,
wow.
You know, their dogs are actually quite empathetic themselves, right? They know when you're not doing well. And yeah, it's been a lesson. I think that's, they've been a kind of a lesson in my life about empathy. So I'm excited. I'm sleeping over April 6th. I'm sleeping in, I don't know. I'm not going to sleep.
How does it work?
I'm going to sleep very poorly. I'm going to be sleeping in the shelter. So we're raising money. If you find my Facebook page, I'll post something on my Twitter soon with more information about this. But yeah, we're essentially raised. It's, you know, some of it's for the money. A lot of it's for the awareness. So it's called the Slumber Paw. P-A-W-T-Y, Slumber Potty.
Love it.
To raise money and awareness for, so that really no companion animals go without a home.
That's so great. And you can find more information. Look for Ben Chan on Twitter. What is your Twitter handle?
My Twitter handle is,
had it here.
What is it, Jeopardy Ben Ben?
Yeah, Jeopardy Ben Ben. So yeah, go to Jeopardy Ben Ben on Twitter.
Yeah, I'll post something soon. Yeah, follow me on Twitter, and I'll post something about that tomorrow, I think.
So here's what's crazy. Like when it comes to dogs, I love dogs, but I'm allergic to dogs. So I've never really, didn't stop my family from getting dogs though. So that's where I am in the pecking order. However, the dogs in my family were so hard to train, and they weren't abused. We just got them from when they were puppies from a friend or whatever. Is it harder to train rescues? I know they can be timid, but how do you get through that training process if they're already like 4 years old in some cases or whatever?
Yeah, I think dogs are very trainable is my experience.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's usually, the cliche is it's usually the humans that need the training, right?
That's
the issue. I think, you know, our two dogs are well-trained in some respects, but they're not well-trained in other respects, but that's all traceable to how we interact with them, right?
Yeah.
So I think, at least in my experience, that's been the case, right? That, yeah, to train a dog, you have to train yourself, right? Because they're reacting to you. They're very, very, like, you know, the dogs that we have, right? These domesticated animals, they've been selected for their adaptability to humans, right? So they're really just playing off of you completely, right?
That's so interesting. My family had a dog. The kids were gone. It was named Paddy. It was a boy, P-A-D-D-Y, Irish dog. It had three legs because it had cancer. It was so hyper. It was a purebred. It would just sit there and look at my dad would be sitting there in the couch watching TV, and the dog would just be roof, roof, roof for 5 hours. Ben, I don't know how they do that. That's incredible. So more power to you for doing that, though. But check out Ben's Twitter and his Facebook page for more information. This is really fun, man. I know your time is limited and you're like probably in demand all over the place, but I really appreciate you coming by. It's fun having you here.
Yeah, it's nice. Anytime.
You know, if you come by one more time, you're a nightlight bestie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, Conrad, can we amend the policy? Can we just like, I mean, he's a big shot, so I think.
Nightlight bestie approved.
Okay, oh, whoa. Very good. And you wanted to watch The Godfather of Green Bay again, so he's in, right?
He's definitely in.
And
yeah,
Carla.
I'll come next time. I'll have to watch it. I haven't seen it yet.
You haven't seen it. So it's not again.
Yeah, yeah.
So you, okay, so here's what we'll do. You watch The Godfather of Green Bay, come back, and I'll write some Jeopardy questions for The Godfather of Green Bay.
I know Lauren Holly.
Okay. So you're pretty much, that's all I had anyways. Hey, we'll be back tomorrow night. I want to thank Rich Scheidner, too. That was so much fun talking to Rich, one of my comedy idols. Ben Chan, my Jeopardy idol. Conrad, just an all-around good guy. Thank you all for your texts. It's been so much fun. Tomorrow night, we're going to talk some Marquette basketball with Todd Townsend, a former guard for the Golden Eagles. He'll be along tomorrow night. And I look forward to reading more of your texts and talking to all of you on Nightlight with Pete Schwab on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good night, Wisconsin.